This is Phil Farron. I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 475. On our way to 500. It's Thursday today. Don't think I'm going to be going into my major client tomorrow. If I do, it will be an interesting experience since tomorrow is May the 4th. Dun, 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 dun. So that'll be fun. Got all my stuff ready for dress up for Star Wars. So it will be fun. Gonna make a few stops here and there. People have said they want to see, so gonna make a few stops here and there. This is really just the rabid fan. I'm slowing down because I'm going out of Maranatha. I just visited with my dad, and there are ducks in the road. They're not in the row, they're in the road. Anyways, so all is well. I'm slightly behind. Just slightly behind this week on writing. Not too bad. About 300 words down. But with the busyness of this past week, it's not too bad. I hit Sunday good. Got my 3,000 words in there. Then I had to bill for my business. Create my invoices Monday night. That takes out a chunk. So instead of 1,000, I only got about 150 words in. My wife and I usually talk on Tuesday nights, and I said, sweetie, this week is blown. I'm going to have to accelerate Tuesday night. So she's, no, that's fine. So I got home and wrote like crazy Tuesday night, put down about 1,800 words in 3 hours, something like that. So I got mostly caught up. And then last night, I was helping out at the church a little bit. And so, like I said, I'm about 300 words down. And then tonight, I'm helping my daughter because they're doing, they do a thing every month where they invite the pastoral staff to bring their kids over so they can go out for a little date night. And so they're bringing their kids over. And of course, Lizzie can't watch all those kids by herself. So we all kind of pitch in and help with that since it's a good cause. And it sounds like we're going to have some special guests this evening, other children who have a few special needs. So it'll make for an exciting evening, but I'm sure it will be just fine. I do have to say, sometimes I just don't know. What brought this up was I was watching a Netflix thing about some special needs kids and how they had been helped by getting on this ketogenic diet. I've been watching this and it's just, ugh. Sometimes you watch the vegetarian documentaries and you're like, right, I should be vegetarian. And then you watch the ketogenic stuff and you're like, right, I should be ketogenic. I have yet to watch anything that says, right, I should be eating a lot of processed sugars. I don't think that documentary is ever going to get made. Although I did hear about a guy who claimed you really had to eat starches. Starches is what you need. So everybody's got their own viewpoint. So I was watching this ketogenic thing and, I don't know. I do have breakfast with a friend tomorrow, and normally I would get like a small bowl of oatmeal and a small cup of fruit. I'm thinking about doing a vegetarian omelet tomorrow, and we'll see. I don't know. Sometimes we'll see. This 5 hour, eating only for 5 hours, though, I'm telling you, if you want to talk about weight loss, this thing is gold. I do this 5 hour thing, you know, 3 or 4 days a week, and my weight has just stabilized. I mean, it's just no big deal. So yeah, anyways, so should try it. It's not bad. My weight really started stabilizing more where I wanted it when I cut out the first meal and went to 8 hours, just eating during 8 hours during the day. And now that I've gone on occasion 3 or 4 times a week, to just eating 5 hours a day, man, it's just not even a challenge anymore to keep the weight off. It's just like, well, there you go. And it's not too bad. It's not too bad. Today was interesting because I not only fasted yesterday, I went ahead and wrapped around and didn't have anything to eat this morning, and then just waited till this afternoon. I mean, I just stuffed some cashews in my mouth, and that was the first I had had to eat all day. So I've basically gone 44 hours without, is that right? 44 hours without eating anything, I think, because I would have eaten at 10 o'clock Tuesday night. Went all day yesterday. That was fine. And then went all day today until about 4:30. So, yeah, 44 hours somewhere in there. But it's fine. It's fine. And I'll talk more about that as I get on the topic today. So writing is good. Family's good. It's good. Star Wars Day tomorrow. That'll be fun. And topic today. So I had watched a TED Talk a little earlier this week, and then I watched a couple of more of his TED Talks. The man's name is Alan Watkins, Dr. Alan Watkins. And he's, you know, physician, done a lot of scientific study and all that kind of stuff. And he has this thing called complete coherence. And the selling point is, and I think his second set of TED Talks that he did is called this, How to Be Brilliant Every Day. How to be brilliant all day, every day? How to be brilliant every day? Something. Anyways, Alan Watkins. He's on YouTube. Worth watching. It's very interesting. And of course, when I hear things like that, I'm like, oh, well, let's go see what this guy has to say. And of course, how does it fit in with the flesh and the spirit and all that kind of thing? Because, as the saying goes, to the man with a hammer, all the world's a nail. So, so I'm like, okay, let's check this out. But, some really interesting stuff. So, in terms of a little background, Dr. Alan Watkins, apparently, according to his own testimony, has been working with some of the world's best CEOs and executives around the world for the last 15 years. So he's very much involved with executives, trying to get them to perform their best. And he told a little anecdote in the beginning of his first talk that I saw. And he was talking about Sergio Garcia, who apparently is a good golfer. And he said the whole week the man had been dominating the field, just doing great, you know, ahead of everybody else. And then on Sunday morning, last day of the tournament, he scores 39 shots, where on the previous day, on exactly the same goals, he scored 29. And because of that, he lost. Guys pulled out in front of him and goes. Said he watched the guy a year later, and the guy was doing exactly the same thing. And he said the commentators were saying, well, you know, golf is a funny game, and, you know, this kind of thing just happens. And he said, I'm yelling at the TV. No, it doesn't. There's a reason for this, and he can fix this, you know. But, of course, he didn't get a chance to. And he was talking about that variability in our performance and what happens in that and how we can maintain a high level of performance throughout the day, every day. Okay, hey, that's pretty good. I mean, for myself, I consider that I perform at a fairly high level, and I have certain mechanisms that allow me to do that, and so I'm always interested to see, hey, is there another mechanism I can add here? You know, can I help this? So one of the things that he starts talking about is he talks about really the entire stack of what's going on in us as humans. And I agree with all of this, absolutely, that our actions really are the outgrowth of our thinking, and our thinking is heavily influenced by our feelings, and our feelings are heavily influenced by our emotions. And he defines emotions as the sensations that we're getting from our body and that are arriving at our brain and our brain is interpreting. And of course, that means that our emotions are heavily influenced by our physical bodies. So there's this whole stack of things going on that can influence what we're doing. And he said, what's interesting is you can see certain telltale signs in physiology of what's happening inside a person's brain. And that's, he's been focusing a lot on that in his research. And it's very interesting. And he said a lot of times when this stuff is going on with people, when they have anxiety, you know, when that we just have a tendency to say to people, don't worry, you know, it'll all work out. You don't need to worry. And he said that doesn't really do any good, because you really haven't addressed the issue. You're just trying to tell people not to feel something they feel, and they're feeling it. And you haven't given them anything to help with that, except maybe you've made it worse because now they're aware that you're aware that they're feeling anxious and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the things that they look at, which is pretty interesting, is variability of heart rate. He said, you go to the doctor and the doctor takes your heart rate and the doctor says, well, the average of your heart rate is 70 beats per minute. So that's pretty good. But he said, that's just the average. He said, there's nothing that's measuring the variability. And he said, your heart does vary. It varies all day long. Might be going 86 and then it drops down. Might be doing 65, goes up to 70. And he said, that's just natural. Your heart rate does that. He said, in fact, he said, according to his research, if we hook you up to a heart monitor and we study the variability of your heart rate over a 24-hour period, he said, I can predict how long you're going to live. He said, medical doctors don't think that's so great. And he said, they won't believe our research. He said, but I can. He said, but you can very much tell the state of a person's mind in terms of how much anxiety they're feeling, in terms of how upset they are, by the variability of their heart rate. And he said, what's interesting is that according to him, our bodies are set up so if there's a wide variability of our heart rate, if we're under a lot of stress and pressure, our bodies are set up to begin shutting down the frontal cortex, which is your executive center. And at one point in his talk, he was talking about, this is actually good design. You wouldn't think it would be, but it's actually good design. He said, because if you're strolling along on the tundra, you look up and there's a large beast, a large predatory beast that's staring at you. You know, you don't need a lot of analysis. What you need is you got to make the decision whether you're going to fall down and play dead or run like crazy or try to fight it. And so he said, what that design does is it kind of gets you figuring out what is the most important action to do and doing it. So that when you get under stress, you know, you start losing this ability to make good, reasonable decisions if the task in front of you requires that. Typically, you know, if our lives were simpler, the only time we would get under that kind of stress is when there's some kind of direct threat, you know, where it's just like adrenaline hits the system and we go, wah, poof, go. Unfortunately, in the lives that we live right now, we have all sorts of stressors where we're sitting in cubicles, we're outside of the, you know, we're not outside anymore. We have deadlines and pressures and all kinds of things. And those react inside our body in the same way predators do, except we can't run away from them as easily. And he demonstrated this, which I thought the demonstration was interesting as the more he talked about this, but we'll get to that in a minute. So he demonstrated this by bringing someone up from the audience, put a heart sensor on his earlobe, and he had a program that was monitoring the variability in the man's heart, and it was showing on a graph behind him. And so he said, so here, you know, here we go. As you can see, he said he's fairly relaxed. There's not a ton of variability. But he said he's a little nervous because he doesn't know what's going to happen up there. And so then he said, what I want him to do, though, is I want you to do a simple task. And if you don't do the task well, if you make a mistake, then you're going to owe me 50 quid. And it was really interesting because as soon as he said that, you could see the variability going up. And he said, you can see here, as soon as I've started to introduce a little bit of stress and pressure, now the variability is going to go up. He said, and if the variability goes up high enough, he's going to start losing his ability to little things here and there, priorities. Good. Getting my mail, by the way. I think some of my stuff was supposed to come in today. Some of my stuff was supposed to come in from my Uncle Sam outfit. Whoa. So this will be fun. And so what he did was he told the young man, he said, all right, what I want you to do is, he said, I'm just going to give you a number. I want you to count backwards by threes from the number I give you, and I want you to do it as long as you can. And so he says 300. So of course the young man starts going 297, 294. And then he gets in the young man's face and he starts just quoting all kinds of other numbers to him. And of course, pretty soon the man just seizes up. I mean, he can't. He just starts going I up. Dr. Watkins said, you know, that's the example. He said, what you see happening here is, he said, the stress rises, and you can see it on the back, on the variability of his heart. His heart just goes wildly variable in it, and it just climbs up, and, you know, and the guy can't even think. He said, that's what's happening. Your frontal cortex is shutting down. It's got too much input. It's just like, go, you know, let's get out of here. So that was all very interesting. He said, now there are techniques. And so one of his techniques that he was showing is breathing. So in the midst of all that chaos, when you feel that chaos, one of the things that Dr. Watkins was saying is that you can just start taking deep, rhythmic, you know, easy, full breaths. Slow. And in his little program there, he actually had a breath indicator, and he told the young man, now look at that breath, and when it goes up, just breathe in, goes down, exhale. And you could see on the graph as he's doing that, you could see all that variability line starts going down, and you could see down below where his heart rate was changing speeds, but it just settled into just a band. It was still varying, but it was varying by a much smaller amount, and it was consistently varying. And he was saying that when you do this, when you breathe deeply, slowly, that you can calm your body down. And you can actually kind of get control back of your facilities if you're anxious and under pressure, which is an interesting idea. And he said part of that is you really need to kind of focus on, you know, the center of your chest. And when you do that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so I'm home and I've got to go because I've got to do this thing. What's interesting about all of this is he did at times hint of the fact, and he's got more stuff. This was just one of the things that he was showing, because they have this program called Complete Coherence, where he talks about not only doing these kinds of exercises, but actually getting control of his emotions. And he never went into depth there. I would imagine that you know, they have an app that they sell. It was interesting because there is, he was talking about the app they sell and how you can identify what emotion you're feeling at any given point and log that. And so you can see what your variance is on your emotions. But at one point he said in this app that they track 35,000 different emotions. And I was like, what? 35,000? What? I mean, I'm tempted to just try to go find the app and download it and pay whatever I need to pay for it just to see what the 35,000 emotions are. But what was interesting to me about this is he did acknowledge in spots, he said, you know, the connection between the brain and the body, there's all kinds of messages that are flowing back and forth. And what I found interesting was that, yes, it is true that by breathing deeply, by focusing your awareness, by becoming more mindful, you can get control of stress. But even he said, by doing this, what you're really doing is getting out of the noise that's in your head. He used some term like that. And I'm like, yep, that's the flesh. So getting out of the noise that's in your head, and in doing that, then you can quiet that noise down. And I was like, yep, that's because the flesh doesn't like being ignored. Because it is true that when we get under pressure, our physiology is being affected. But when he was in his face, this young man's face, and he was trying to trip him up and put him at, when he's talking to him and saying numbers, when he's trying to perform a task and he's in front of an audience, what is really causing that stress? Really, really, what is really causing it? That stress is being created in that young man's mind because there's a dissonance between the task that he's trying to accomplish and something that's distracting him. And in addition to that, I believe that then the flesh is ginning up all these things. What's wrong with that guy? Why is he saying those words to us? Everyone's looking at me. They're all going to think I'm an idiot because I can't do this. I'm going to fail at this. I'm going to fail at this. And everybody's going to think I'm stupid. Okay, all those lies that the flesh is just funneling into his mind. And then out of that, because there's all that disturbance, it affects his physiology. And then that in turn, when you get all those effects hitting the physiology, binds up the frontal cortex because you've got all this noise, A, from the flesh, and then B, you have this variable heart rate. And so now the mind goes, it's time to get out of here. You know, it's doing that stuff. So I think, even in that context with what he was talking about, it's very easy to factor the flesh in there and say that, yes, the situation itself would put the young man under stress, and that's certainly a component of it. But that stress is being amplified then by a flesh that's lying to him, that's trying to make him think there's going to be these horrific consequences, when maybe there is, maybe there isn't. So it is interesting, but in addition to that, what was interesting to me is the fact that, yes, just some deep breathing is enough to kind of push back the flesh a little bit. And I was actually trying it today because obviously today my body was under some stress because I hadn't eaten since Tuesday night. And it was funny, yesterday afternoon when it got to be about 4 o'clock, I was trying to figure out a little bit of a problem, and I was struggling a little bit. My head was hurting a little bit. And so the flesh was telling me, you can't concentrate. You can't concentrate. I mean, you know, because you just can't, you haven't had any food. You can't concentrate. You're not going to be able to do this. You're not going to, like, no, I think I'm going to be okay. But there was a struggle of, but I made it through the end of the day, got some good work done. Well, then I'm coming back in today and I don't have any food. And now I'm having to actually finish up all this coding that I started yesterday on a non-trivial problem. It was a non-trivial problem. It was a mapping issue, trying to make the monkey smarter to be able to pick some priority numbers they were called correctly. But I just determined today that I wasn't going to listen to the flesh. And I was like, no, that's just a lie. I'll be fine. I'll be fine. Humans have survived and existed on a whole lot less food than we eat all the time. They've been managing to make good decisions on a whole lot less food. I'm very privileged here. I can make good decisions, even though I haven't eaten since Tuesday night. And that's served me perfectly well. You know, when I got into late afternoon, then, or afternoon, late afternoon, you know, I was starting to feel it a little bit. But then, you know, I thought, well, let's just try this deep breathing. So I just kept working and, you know, breathing slowly, rhythmically. And that, it helped. It was pretty interesting. It did help. You know, when I was kind of feeling a little drug out and feeling like, oh, you know, I'm really struggling here. You know, I just started doing that thing. And, of course, you're getting a little extra oxygen, so you get a little pick-me-up from that. And, you know, you're focusing on doing that as opposed to, am I doing okay? Am I working okay? You know, and then you just start working a lot. It's very, very interesting. So, if anything, I got the little deep breathing thing out of those talks, but also I'd like to pursue it a little more just to see what else he's got to say. Because he supposedly has more techniques, and I'd be stunned if those more techniques don't have something tangentially to do with not listening to the lies in your head. You know, I'm sure he's not going to call it the flesh. I know that. But if he gets into don't listen to certain conversations that are going into your head, don't listen to things that are trying to make you feel bad about what you're doing. It's like, yeah, flesh, 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 flesh. That's the flesh. And that's why we don't listen to that. So anyway, it's very interesting. I have some kiddos to go watch. Have a great week. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.